Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Oh, we got the holiday cheer here at Lotus Broadcasting. Had a holiday luncheon catered, and then a lot of people brought desserts. I just went over to Jared, and I think I made his day. We've talked about Jared. We have like the 12 chefs of Cofield and Company, and Jared's definitely on the list. He's a big baker. His cheesecake cupcake with a graham crust.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah, and he makes really good breads.
I hope he brings in some bread. I can't really cook. You can. And I don't dare ever ask you if you can cook. Do you know how to make something? Because you ripped my head off when I asked you years ago if you know. You know how to make mac and cheese?
Yeah, because it was for Thanksgiving. Yeah. And I said, I'm bringing the mac and cheese. I mean, if somebody said, here's the thing.
Tone was incorrect. It was
there are certain dishes, James, back me up on this. There are certain dishes you don't. If someone says, I'm bringing the mac and cheese, I'm bringing this, there are certain side dishes that if you say you're bringing it, you know, obviously you know how to do it.
Okay. I've had some bad mac and cheese. Chuck Powell's in with us from Seattle, KJR in Seattle. Chuck, sports. What's going on, buddy?
Did you guys take clam chowder and bread bowls? That's always a great thing to take. Have it sit around all day, getting all soggy. That's a great thing to take to a potluck.
Next year.
As long as you make the bread bowl.
Next year, I will make sure we have some lukewarm clam chowder.
And as long as you get the fish from Pike's Place Fish Market.
Is somebody bringing an ambrosia salad? That guy always needs to be slapped down.
Old school. I think that died with the last generation.
Don't invite my Aunt Shirley to one of your potlucks if you don't want ambrosia salad there, because that's what she's bringing.
Oh, man. It's a nightmare. Aunt's putting raisins in the potato salad? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, yeah, she's got all kinds of tricks, old people tricks like that.
Chuck Powell, KJR, is with us here on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno. All right, tell me how this year has gone just from covering it and the fun element of the Seahawks. This is really back-to-back years. They've been more than competitive, and now we might argue they're the best team in the NFC.
I don't know if there's a great team in the NFC. I think the Rams have been closest to being consistently good this year, consistently maybe even great. I think the Seahawks have touched it, but haven't stayed in that lane. But in terms of, like, capabilities, I mean, man, there is something special coming together in this Mike McDonald program, and everybody's sensing it. Him and John Schneider are on the same page in terms of personnel. The guy's a defensive genius. All the players have seemingly bought into it all. Sam Darnold has not only been an upgraded quarterback, sorry about that, Vegas, but he's been, you know, one of the top quarterbacks in the National Football League. So this program's really coming together. I think it's got a really bright future, and because the rest of the NFC seems a little bit watered down, I don't see it being the gauntlet the postseason that it's been in recent years. I mean, there's a chance that the time is now to be special.
I have Sam Darnold scars from the Jets, so I really can't be objective on him. How do you think he'll do? I mean, that just happens, man. How do you think he'll do the rest of the way? Do you have some worries that turnover-happy Sammy D is going to come back?
Well, it continuously comes up, and I get that it's a storyline, but I mean, since this guy got to Minnesota, it has been a complete turnaround. I mean, he's now won over the course of the last 2 years, like 75% of his games, 80% of his games. He's committing a lot of turnovers, but he's also being told by his head coach, let it rip, Sam. And his confidence, I don't know what it looked like with the New York Jets, but I know what it looks like with the Seattle Seahawks. This guy doesn't let a previous turnover bother him. If he commits one, he comes back out firing the very next time. And believe me, the team has benefited a lot more from that mentality than it has cost them. But it did cost them in the Rams game. I mean, he cost them the previous Rams matchup. He committed four turnovers to the Rams one. And even though the Seahawks doubled them up in time of possession, total yards, passing yards, I mean, they dominated them statistically. They still lost the game because Sam Darnold committed four turnovers to Matt Stafford's one. So certainly the nation is watching whether or not Sam Darnold can clean up his game going forward, but I don't have a problem with it. Yeah, he had one stinker of a game, and it cost them. But they're 11-3 right now with him going out there playing gunslinger football. I think that I think he's had a fantastic season, and I'm excited about what he brings in future years. And even if they lose the turnover margin tonight by one, maybe even two, I think they can still beat the Rams here at home tonight. If you get to -3, you're going to lose, especially to good teams. And that's what happened the last time out. But personally, I'm not that worried. And I think that anyone that's watched every snap this year of the Seahawks doesn't want Sam Darnold to change a thing. And I know his head coach doesn't.
Chuck Powell is on ESPN Las Vegas. He does morning radio for KJR in Seattle. I want to dive a little deeper on McDonald and the connection that Snyder and the organization had with him to hook him, because, man, there's a lot of NFL programs up and down the Eastern Seaboard that have hired terrible coaches, like, over and over again, but at least in the last couple of cycles they did. How the hell did he escape from Baltimore, where he was there for, like, what, 10 of 11 years before 1 year at Michigan? What was the connection to get him out to Seattle?
I don't know what the personal connection was, but I know what went into the thinking. The NFC West features maybe the two brightest offensive minds in the sport today, Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, and they're both so friggin' young still that there's a trade made in the future, or they just get tired of it like McVay nearly did a couple of years ago. John Schneider knew that he was going to have to combat those two guys for many years to come. So he could go out and get the next offensive genius and really make a play for Ben Johnson in Detroit, or he could make the counter move and get the guy that looks like he's the next defensive genius in the sport. And he has just been fantastic since he got here. And so that was it was a counter move to what the Seahawks face in the NFC West. And already they've caught up to the Rams and the 49ers. They're not above them yet, but they've certainly caught up to them. And interesting thing between the dynamic between head coach and general manager, I think Mike McDonald was very reluctant when he first arrived to step on the proven John Schneider with a Super Bowl ring on his toes. And so there were some personnel moves that were made. And last season, they got changed like a third of the way through the year. Mike McDonald said that linebacker doesn't work, and neither does that one. I mean, they dumped their two starting linebackers that they had just signed in the offseason because Mike McDonald knew they didn't work in his system. So they brought in Ernest Jones with a trade a year ago. He's perfect for the Mike McDonald defense. And since that time, both general manager and head coach have been in lockstep with one another. And this thing is just couldn't be going better here in Seattle right now. And so, like I said before, not only is there a bright future in this organization because of these two guys, I think there's a bright present. We might already be ready to take the throne away from the Rams. We'll see tonight.
Speaking with Chuck Powell, KJR, Seattle, joining us on Cofield & Company, ESPN Las Vegas. Back to the game tonight. You talked about Stafford. You talked about Darnold. And the turnovers in the first game. One of the things that the Rams have been able to sort of rely upon is their balanced offense. They've got a two-headed monster in the backfield. But when you make the adjustments and you improve the way that Seattle has, you look at the defense the last 3 weeks, they've allowed a combined 25 points. They're a top-four rushing defense. They allow less than 4 yards per attempt. They've allowed, I think, tied for the second lowest touchdowns rushing. Devontae Adams out. You turn the Rams into a one-dimensional team. How much is the defense really the key for tonight's game?
The Seahawks defense, I think it's always the key, but I think it's also one of those situations where there's just an expectation now that we're at least going to play good defense and probably very good defense with a chance of reaching greatness, scraping greatness. So from that standpoint, I mean, Matt Stafford has had an MVP year, and I'm a big fan of Matt Stafford's game. I think he is the MVP of the league, and he's played like an MVP every single game this season except when he faced the Seahawks. He had 130 passing yards and looked confused. I mean, that's how good Mike McDonald and his scheme are, that he can confuse Matt Stafford in the midst of his best season that he's ever had. And so I think I don't know if defense is going to be the key to it, because I think you know what you're going to get from Seattle, and I think you know what you're going to get from the Rams. They're not just an offensive team, even though their big names are all on the offensive side of the ball. I do believe the key is going to be Seattle's offense. It's going to decide the game tonight, and they have not been able to run the ball all season long, and yet they are determined to prove to the world that they can. They're one of the top teams in the National Football League in rush attempts, and yet one of the worst teams in the NFL with yards per carry. So they can either continue to bang their head against the wall to prove to everybody that they can run the football, or what I would like to see tonight is them, if it's not working, try to establish it, abandon it earlier than you have, because I don't think you want to get into the third quarter still trying to prove to the Rams that you can run the football. You've been throwing the ball all season long this year, so I've been harping about on this all week long on my show. I don't want to lose this big game because you're trying to prove that your weakness isn't as weak as it appears. I want them to, if you're going to go down swinging. Now, I say that, but there is a weather element tonight. There's going to be wind from 20-mile-per-hour gusts, maybe up to 40. So that affects the passing game certainly more than it does the running game. So we'll see how weather impacts that philosophy. But all things being equal, I don't want to lose this game if I'm the Seahawks by trying to establish what I do the worst on my entire team.
Chuck Powell, KJR Radio in Seattle. We got less than 2 minutes. Chuck, did you suspect that this was going to happen with Pete Carroll in Vegas?
No, I came on with you guys at the beginning of the year, and it feels like I mislead you. I almost feel bad about it. I thought it was a decent idea and a good roll of the dice. Somebody's a proven winner that would come in and show the Raiders organization, you know, the steps it takes to win. But man, I certainly didn't see worst record in the league. I certainly didn't think Geno Smith was going to look like the worst starting quarterback in the National Football League. So I didn't think it would be this bad. I mean, I didn't think that he was going to turn you into a Super Bowl team overnight. But I thought that you would get better under Pete Carroll. And now I can't imagine that you can convince yourself in Vegas to bring him or Geno Smith back next year. You probably just got to, you know, take your loss and build with something else that's younger and hopefully win sooner than later.
Yeah, for me, the biggest surprise is either that Pete has been a central part of the power brokers there disagreeing and having different goals, or he got kind of sucked in by the problems of the Raiders of the last 5 years, and it's just been a mess. So even Pete couldn't
straighten out. Well, it's been flipping a little bit. Yeah. It's been flipping with him a little bit, and maybe there were the warning signs we should have seen. Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that Mike McDonald and John Schneider, personnel-wise, are on such the same page, I think Pete started throwing his weight around here about personnel decisions, and maybe they weren't good ones. And then defensively, I mean, he's known as a defensive genius. We are now seeing what a defensive genius looks like in the modern day. I mean, Pete had his day, but in the last 2 years, seeing Mike McDonald, it is night and day to the defense that Pete Carroll had for the Seahawks prior to McDonald arriving here. And so, I mean, maybe we should have seen the signs coming. Maybe the game just does pass everybody by, no matter how great they were at one point.
Chuck, you're the man. 5 seconds left. We appreciate it. Thank you so much.
All right. Enjoy your ambrosia salad.
I will. Stop bad-mouthing Aunt Shirley. Really. We apologize to Aunt Shirley. See ya.
Sorry, Aunt Shirley.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, let's talk some Northern Nevada sports. Shannon Kelly, Nevada Sportsnet, nice enough to join us. Fresh off the vacay. Willie's here. Shannon, how are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing good. I'm getting my feet back under me after taking a few days off. So happy Thursday.
Did you go somewhere or just unwound at home?
I went somewhere. I went down to Arizona for a wedding. So one of my friends got married in Scottsdale and then made the short trek over to Vegas to spend some time with the family, a little early Christmas down in Vegas.
Okay, I need some Christmas advice, and I lean on you for stuff like this. Whether I have in the past or not, I don't know. But I'm going to lean on you this time. I've been in a relationship for a long time, So we've done a bunch of Christmases, bunch of holidays together. We're at like 14 or 15 years. What should my budget be for total gift haul? Let's talk brass tacks.
Oh, wow. I think it depends. Is your significant other a big Christmas person? I feel like you got to keep it fair, though. Like, you can't, one can't outspend the other because that's just not fair. So, I don't know, like maybe $200? I don't know. Is
wow,
that too low, less?
Low.
Is that too,
you are cheap.
Too less? What,
your husband's getting nothing.
Okay.
What are you stuffing the stocking for your husband? What's going on here? Is that your budget?
I mean, just get married this year. So, we are being cheap this year.
Well,
so
good
maybe
point,
a little
actually.
Bit more than that.
Yeah, how much of the money did you guys have to throw into the wedding? Because after a wedding, you're like, you know, we're not getting anything, okay? Nothing.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we said to each other, and I've stayed around $200, so I did actually, I should have disclaimed that. So, okay, maybe double that, so like 400, 500?
Both of you guys are
on
so
a normal year?
Off. Wow. It's not even...
A lot less?
Both of you guys' answers...
You know, I'm frugal.
Here's how it works. For both of you, okay? Take it from somebody. Well, maybe you shouldn't take it from me because my marriage failed. but my marriage, my relationship with my son's mother failed and my marriage failed, but that was on them. Now, here's the thing. I never looked at budget and what we could afford that year, this, that, the other, because we always had rules where after Labor Day, no splurging, no nothing. Everything goes toward the holidays, number one. Number two, you know what? What do you want? What's most meaningful? What do you – not what you need either, because need and want are two different things. I've always said that with – especially with kids. Like, you know, stuffing the stocking with toothbrushes and toothpaste and underwear and socks is a slap in the face to kids.
Oh, I love that so much.
No,
as a kid, I love it.
No, it's not what you need. It's what
Free
you
stuff.
Want. But – your significant other wants something, and you want. Shannon wants something. Her husband wants something. What Shannon wants might cost $289. What her husband wants may only cost $49. But you know what? It's what he really wants for the outdoorsman in him or whatever. Just go get what they want and don't look at the price tags. And if one of you rings up $189 and the other one rings up $342. Big deal. If both of you ring up $500 bills for Christmas, guess what? You both got what you wanted. There's no budget.
That was good.
Yeah, that was really good.
I feel chastised a bit, but I really learned a lesson there. Let's get into a little post football season football, because it was interesting today. It looks like, I don't know, did the Mountain West send something out? I noticed at least both Nevada and UNLV sent out their schedule for next year in the Mountain West Conference. Did you take a look at this? The Wolfpack have Air Force, Hawaii, New Mexico, San Jose State at home, road games. Damn, I don't have the road games. No, I was just, actually, do they have that right? Yeah. NIU, UNLV, UTEP, and Wyoming. What were your thoughts on seeing the slate? And also, were you a little bit jarred when you didn't see the Disloyal Five as part of the mix?
Yeah, I thought it was kind of weird. I saw it come through, and I'm like, oh, wait, where's San Diego State, Boise State, Fresno State, Utah State? They're not there. Yep. Where are they? Yes, I thought it was interesting. But, yes, I think you want to be playing your – toughest opponents at home. So I think you look at Hawaii, New Mexico, even Air Force, you know, they weren't as good this year, but you want to be playing your toughest opponents at home. Yes, the game against UNLV is down in Vegas, as it typically flip-flops every year. But, you know, another trip to Wyoming, I don't think Nevada's going to complain after they got a win there this past year. And then adding some new blood in and UTEP and Northern Illinois. So it seems like a favorable schedule. But I think I also said that this past year, too.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
How do you think Choate is going to try to build this time? Because I think he was a little heavier on young guys last time around. Do you feel like he's in a, hey, I got to fix it now mode or I'm out of here? So is he going to have to go heavy portal?
Well, I think just when you look back at this year, and there were a lot of younger guys, and a lot of them did see playing time and got reps. So, I mean, I think, though, you got to upgrade the talent at wide receiver, and that just wasn't there this year when you look at the Cortez Braham and the Jaden Smith, that production 2 years ago that just wasn't replaced this past season at wide receiver. I mean, I think you have to try and get some experience at those positions, at wide receivers specifically, and you got to get some experience too at running back. So I think while some other positions may be young, at those positions specifically, you got to have guys that have some experience, I think, just in this climate today.
Basketball side of things for the Wolfpack, as we're talking to Shannon Kelly, Nevada Sportsnet. Alford's team, 8-3. KenPom of 90. Give me a report card grade through the non-con. What do you give them?
Yeah, I think Nevada's had some close games, you know, four of those games. One possession game, an overtime game in there. You know, I like what Nevada's been able to do in the non-con so far, 8-3. I'm probably going with a C+.
Whoa!
Leaning towards a B.
That's kind of low.
Well, I say that because Nevada has had some close games, right, but has been able to close out the close games. I think, you know, I wasn't at the Duquesne game on Saturday since I was gone, but I don't know. I just think, you know, this team's still trying to find its identity, and, you know, I don't know if they were closer to finding that after the Duquesne game, but I just remember we had asked Coach Alford that prior to the Washington State game, and he felt like that they weren't close yet. So I'm like, well, are they getting there? You know, wins are wins, though. So, yeah. I don't know. Maybe I was a little too harsh there. That was just my initial thoughts, though. So I think they've done good, but now it's a matter of, hey, can you continue to play these close games? If you're going to play close games, can you continue to close them out? Because Nevada wasn't able to do that last year. But I do like the chemistry of this team. Just can they gel fast enough with these tough Mountain West games quickly approaching, with Boise State Saturday and then Colorado State in a couple of weeks?
Yep, first four games in conference, Boise at home, at CSU, at Fresno, home San Diego State. That could be a 1-3 start. We don't know. I'll ask you this. I think the conference is going to have wild variation in terms of pace of play. I think there's a lot more running teams and up-tempo teams. Is this Wolfpack team equipped to play grinded out ball with San Diego State and potentially Boise, but then also maybe play into the 80s and 90s with Utah State and Colorado State and Grand Canyon?
That's the thing. And Nevada, you know, said before the season started that they wanted to play faster. They wanted to play up more up-tempo this year. So are they going to be able to do that when they get into these games against Mountain West teams that they know are going to play fast? Can they keep up and match that that speed? So I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But when I looked at the quick box score from the Duquesne game, I was like, whoa, I didn't think that game would be so close. Boise State blew out Duquesne a couple days before that. So I was a little surprised to see that on Saturday. So yeah, maybe I'm a harsh grader here today.
I
still have vacation brain.
Do they have an impact freshman? That's what I like to call the freshmen who have impact. It's not real creative, but do they have an impact freshman in Peyton White? I noticed that Nevada Sportsnet, the site, talked about this being one of the better freshman seasons any Nevada players had since like 3-4 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Peyton White, I mean, he's been making an impact so far. He had a couple of huge, big free throws down the stretch, a couple of big plays he's had in some other games late down the stretch. So, yeah, I mean, I think you could, you know, almost compare him to Nick Davidson when he came in. You know, he was able to make an impact early on in his career. But, yeah, Peyton White, he's been a fun player to watch, and it'll be exciting to see what he can do in Mountain West play if, you know, what he's done so far can continue into the league showing.
Shannon Kelly up on ESPN Reno, ESPN Las Vegas from Nevada Sports Tonight. All right, this is the portion of the interview each week where I make you speak on behalf of all of Northern Nevada. This is a tough position for you. there's a story that just came out in the RGJ talking about the success of what I'll call our snitching program when it comes to license plates. A lot of people driving around Nevada without a license plate, without updated registration. Since October, 21,800 cars have been reported. 17,500 are down here of the reported cars. Now, I know we have a bigger population, but are you guys just not doing your part? Are you not out taking pictures of cars, Shannon, and getting VIN numbers and telling people, hey, don't come near me? You're breaking the law. I'm getting you.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've been busy. My side job. I haven't been hustling as much as I should be this fall. You know, it's been busy around here, Steve. But my goodness, that's one heck of a stat. Go to the DMV, people. My goodness. They're going to get a ticket.
Do you notice
that we don't
want.
I do, but... I do, but definitely not as much as I would in Vegas. Now I'm going to notice it more in Vegas, I'm sure. Now that you say it, it's kind of one of those things you don't think about it until you hear it. Yep. But my goodness, that is crazy.
Do you have a pen and paper right next to you?
I do.
All right, I got two words for you.
Okay, I'm gonna write it down.
Because Nevada is traveling to DeKalb, Illinois next year.
Yeah, we're out in 20 seconds. Let's go.
Pizza Villa.
Pizza Villa. Yeah.
That's all you
okay,
need
Willie.
To know. That's all you
Willie
need to
said
know.
That's the pizza snitch. That's the food snitch when you go to NIU.
Okay. I'm going to save this piece of paper, Willie, until next fall.
Ask around.
We'll text you before the game. We'll remember. Shannon, we appreciate it. Thank you.
Hey, thanks, guys. Talk to you later.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
Halfway point of the show is brought to you by Battleborne Injury Lawyers. 766-1400 is the number. Battleborne Injury Lawyers with an office in Northern Nevada, four here in Southern Nevada. Call from anywhere in the state of Nevada. 766-1400, 775 in the north. Scott Seidenberg's coming up in about 7 minutes. He is one of our experts in front of the counter, Making the Bets, Better Day podcast, and 1230 VSiN The Game was where you can hear Scott, listen to Scott, watch Scott. So he's coming up in just a few. Pittsburgh and Baltimore the rest of the way, every game's important. To get that title in the AFC North, obviously they didn't keep pace with the rest of the top teams in the AFC. These are big times for Mike Tomlin again as he looks to make sure that his 500 or better streak continues, and more importantly, make the playoffs and maybe win a game in the playoffs.
It's one way to look at it, but the other way is that I don't think that he's thinking about that, right? Yeah. 53 years old, he has 199 career wins, including the playoffs, since being hired in 2007. And he's going for yet another winning record. But when he's going into it, I think what's important to recognize is that it's always getting done. It could become – it's repetitive. Steelers fans may be tired of hearing it and saying, yeah, that's great, but what about a playoff win? What about another Super Bowl? But the fact of the matter is, John Harbaugh and the Baltimore Ravens should be concerned with the fact that if it's happening since then, it's consistent. And this guy knows how to coach under pressure and finding ways to win. And the fact that that division – is still up in the air, and Baltimore coming out of nowhere after that dreadful start, it's cause for concern simply because, like him or not, Tomlin's one of the best coaches in the NFL and arguably one of the best ever considering the franchise he's led and how many times we've talked about, you know, how the Steelers, do they move on? We talked about it a couple of weeks ago. I mean, in our time, Steve, we've known three coaches. Chuck Knoll, Bill Cowher, and Mike Tomlin. Guy gets it done.
Must win for the Lions this week, too. They have no room for error. Lions are 7-point favorites. It's one of the games you're looking at?
Yeah, just, I mean, for that simple fact, you have two teams that in must-win situations, and I think Jared Goff is continually having a chip on his shoulder with how he's been playing. Ranked second in the NFL, 29 touchdown passes, third with 3,600 yards. I mean, realistically, he could go over the 4,000-yard mark this week. I don't know if he will. Didn't really realize this, but since entering the league in 2016, he leads the NFL with 3,361 completions and 38,730 passing yards. He ranks third with 251 touchdown passes. It's something that I wouldn't have really put on when you talk about Jared Goff, right? I mean, the Rams move on for him. They get Matthew Stafford. They bring him in. They win the Super Bowl. The Lions pick him up and say, okay, we'll take him. And seemingly with Dan Campbell, they've turned things around. this year's not going as planned, but the fact of the matter is I wouldn't have put him as the leader in the last 9 years. So both teams playing with chips on their shoulder, like I said, and must wins if they want to keep their playoffs open. This is an important week for a lot of teams, and those are two of them.
Last minute here, Packers, Bears ahead of the Packers now. Bears at home getting one against Green Bay without Micah Parsons.
Without Micah Parsons is pretty much summarizes that right there, because this is a Bears team that we have talked about all season in that, well, they'll reveal their true colors. Well, they haven't beaten this, or they've gotten lucky, or again, when you find ways to win, there's something to be said for that. And without your leader, your the guy you went and got to turn the defense around, and it worked, and your defense was swarming, without him, that's trouble.
364-1100, caller 7364-1100. Time to give away more of those Las Vegas Bowl tickets. You can get yours at lvbowl.com. It's the Huskers against the Utes. Maybe it is Kyle Whittingham's last game at Utah. Nebraska and Utah on New Year's Eve. Call in now.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas and ESPN Reno.
All right, time to get some picks, some leans, some likes from one of our experts. Our Thursday expert is Scott Seidenberg from Better Day Podcast and VSiN and VSiN 1230, the game right here at Lotus Broadcasting. What's up, Scott? How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing good. Excited for this weekend. College football playoffs finally here.
All right, let's get into, before we get to the college football playoff, let's get to the matter at hand tonight, and that is a very good tilt between two 11 and 3 teams. Where do you want to go, Rams and Seahawks?
I went with the Rams here tonight, and I did go with the Rams also in the first quarter. If you look at what the Seahawks have done in the first quarter this season, they're punting at nearly half of their opening drives on the season, so I actually did sprinkle a little bit on the Seahawks' first drive to end in a punt. But the Rams have been one of the best offenses early on in their games. And yes, Davante Adams is not going to play, which obviously limits the red zone opportunities for Matthew Stafford. But this rushing attack is dominant. With Kyren Williams and now Blake Corum getting more heavily involved, this offensive line is the best run-blocking offensive line in the NFL. And every time I look at this game, I can't ignore Sam Darnold's two previous performances against the Rams. The 4-interception game earlier this season, and then the playoff game last year when he was with the Vikings, where he was completely embarrassed. There's something about Sam Darnold going up against Sean McVay that McVay might have figured out. And I just don't, I mean, I understand why the Seahawks are favored here. They're at home. It's a short week. The Rams had all those travel problems yesterday, but the Rams are my number one power rated team in the NFL. They're the better team and they should win this game.
Let's go to Sunday NFL. We'll come back to Friday and Saturday football tilts. First off, Bills are now 10 at the Browns.
Yeah, how good has Josh Allen been lately? And everyone's talking about the MVP with Matthew Stafford being the MVP or Drake May being the MVP. Josh Allen, in the last couple of weeks, has probably been the best quarterback in the NFL. And in the second halves of games is really where he is starting to run the ball a lot and starting to dominate the opposition here. It's a heavy number, honestly, and every time you're laying double digits here in the NFL, you have to be concerned a little bit. But the Browns offense is not going to really do anything here in this game. I'm not worried about them scoring any points. I think the Bills will have their way. The Bills should win this game. Josh Allen might not have to run as much because they should be leading heavily in this game. But I lean very, very strongly towards the Bills handling their business quite easily here.
Scott Seidenberg on ESPN Reno, ESPN Las Vegas. Saints are now 4.5 against the Jets. I saw the Jets signed Hendon Hooker, quarterback to the practice squad. Get him out there. Protect the pick. Get him out there. What's going to happen in this one?
Brady Cook's not going to look good like he hasn't in the past couple of weeks. And speaking of not looking good or looking good at quarterback, can we give a little kudos to Tyler Shuck? The last 2 weeks for Tyler Shuck, he's put up a QBR of, 75, and then he had 110 quarterback rating in the last game against Carolina. Like, Tyler Shuck has actually performed well over the past couple of weeks to the point where a lot of people around the New Orleans Saints are thinking maybe they don't need to draft a quarterback with a top pick because maybe the guy that they drafted in the second round this year could be their quarterback of the future. The one concern I have with the New Orleans Saints is they are just decimated by injury, right? They're already without Kamara. Devin Neal is out in this game. Devon Vele, who they traded for to add some depth at the wide receiver position, he's out as well. So it's very hard to come to a consensus as far as a play on this, given how injured New Orleans is.
Do you want to give J.J. McCarthy of the Vikings a little bit of credit? Looked pretty decent last week, laying three at the Giants.
I mean, I guess I owe him an apology, but no. He's still terrible on the season. One game does not just automatically erase all the negative that has happened earlier. The one concern that I have in this game is because I loved the Giants last week. I thought it was a great spot for the Giants to be in against the Commanders. And for them to lose that football game was pretty embarrassing. And I understand that, like, they are saying all the right things inside the building as far as their defense is concerned. We know the interim coach is fighting for maybe a potential look next year. I actually like the over in this game, if we're being honest. I know that the New Orleans, I mean, Minnesota's defense and Brian Flores, you're going to think that he's going to limit the opportunities. But we're seeing Mike Kafka kind of open up the playbook here for the Giants. They're throwing the ball. They're attacking down the field. Jackson Dart still performing at a high level. I think we're going to see points here in this game.
I'm really curious to hear your take on this one because when Brian Callahan was running the Titans, you pointed out he was just a nightmare when it came to covering the spread. You got a Chiefs team that doesn't have anything to play for. Minshew, no Mahomes. Is this too much of an adjustment? The awful Titans are only getting three against the Chiefs?
It is a significant adjustment. A very, very significant adjustment. I'll tell you right now, I dropped Kansas City in my latest power ratings. Let me pull up the numbers here. I dropped them a full 10 points in my power rating. Because it's not just Mahomes, but it's also like what we call the dream crusher scenario. Right? You know your season's over. So what type of effort do we expect to see? Plus, I think there's a lot of questions around the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know if you guys saw this, but in the latest Kelce podcast, right? Travis Kelce is talking about the Mahomes injury. And every time he refers to the Chiefs, he says the Chiefs. He doesn't say we or us. Wow. So he says, hopefully he'll be back for the Chiefs week one. Hopefully the Chiefs get him back next year and they'll turn it around. A lot of people are saying, well, maybe Travis Kelce's hinting at he's not going to be around next year and he's retiring. I just think there's a lot of noise here. I'm certainly not going to back the Tennessee Titans, but I'm not running to the window to bet Kansas City with all of the uncertainty, with all the outside noise and the idea that their season is completely over.
Boy, the Broncos have looked so impressive. They've won a lot of close games. I mean, last week was a coming out party for Bo Nix. Broncos 3 against the Jags?
I love them. This might be one of my favorite plays of the week. Jacksonville is a team that, yes, I've underrated at times, but Denver is a team that everybody should be acknowledging. You know, every week I do my trench report and I talk about offensive and defensive line play in the NFL. And the Denver Broncos show up in the top five rankings in three out of my four categories, which is pass block, pass rush, and run stuff. They're the only team in the NFL that is a top three offensive line unit top five offensive line unit in multiple categories like that. Some teams are two units, like Cleveland's pass rush and run stuff is great, right? But as far as both an offensive line and a defensive line showing up, this is the best line in football. And I think they're going to be able to get to the quarterback. I think that they will protect Bo Nix. And I think that they win and cover here against Jacksonville. I love the Broncos.
Are you willing to take the Raiders plus the points in any of their remaining games? I mean, this time they're getting a whopping 14 against the Texans.
No. It's a stupid line. I'll be honest with you. It really is a stupid line. However, as I mentioned, I do that trench report every single week on my website on betterday.com. This is the number one biggest line mismatch in the NFL this week, according to my metrics. The Texans' offensive and defensive line versus the Raiders' offensive and defensive line. The number one biggest mismatch out of any game this week is the Texans-Raiders. That is something that I am never going to bet against because this has been a very incredible, profitable run for me this season backing the Trench Report. So I would not take the points here with the Raiders.
Last one, we had a quarterback change in, this is the last one in the NFL, we'll get to college football here. We had a quarterback change in Miami. Scott Seidenberg's with us. How much does this change alter the line? I mean, it is massive, right? Now it's all, swung all the way to Cincy minus four.
Yeah, it's because it's not Zach Wilson, right? It's Quinn Ewers. So I think if it was Zach Wilson, maybe we don't see this drastic of a line movement, but you're going to Quinn Ewers, and there's just so much uncertainty. We don't know what to expect from him. I would think that you get a boost from the offense. I mean, Tua was so lost. I don't know if you guys saw when the NFL Films releases like the mic'd up segments like throughout the week or whatever. And Tua is, you know, after the game, he's talking to Cam Hayward and just dabbing him up and just saying, hey, good game, whatever. And Tua goes, hey, bro, what do I have to fix?
Ah.
And like, that's a quarterback that is completely shook to the point where I get it. He's asking a veteran, you know, for some advice or whatever. But you're literally going to a defensive lineman on the other team and just asking him, what do you have to fix? Like, this offense was completely lost. I can only see it going up from here. So maybe if you want to play around, if you think that we know that the Bengals defense is so bad, maybe if you want to do a Dolphins team total to go over here, because it's kind of like backing them without backing them on the spread. And it's not backing the over because you're getting a reduced line on Miami's total because they are the dogs in this game. And we know how bad the Cincinnati defense is. Maybe Quinn Ewers scores a couple of touchdowns here and the Dolphins score some points.
Scott Seidenberg, Saturday CFP first. 91% of the cash, 78% of the tickets on Oregon. Can you make a case for JMU plus 21?
They're great on defense, I guess. But they struggle offensively, especially on the road. When they went to Louisville, they scored just 14 points. They scored 24 points in their only other Power Four matchup, and that was against Washington State in a game that should never have been close, but it wound up being a battle for them. Oregon's defense is too good to allow points in this game. They allow 14.8 points per game. And when they win games, it's down to 13 points per game. They're eighth in the nation in stop rate. And I don't trust Alonzo Barnett, the quarterback of James Madison, once they are trailing and they have to abandon the run. When they become one-dimensional, I don't trust him to pass on this Oregon defense. The best bet that I made in this game was going James Madison's team total under 13.5. And I guess that's saying that I think Oregon covers. I just don't think James Madison scores two touchdowns on this Ducks defense.
Ole Miss minus 17.5 against Tulane.
Well, we saw this game already during the season. What's going to be different, right? I mean, why is this game going to be different than the 45-10 blowout that we saw in the regular season, in which Ole Miss outgained Tulane 548-282? And also in that game, Ole Miss had to settle for field goals in the first half. Mm-hmm. So they could have scored more than 45 points. That was also Trinidad Chambliss' just second start at quarterback for Ole Miss. Now he's had a whole season under his belt. I do think that, you know, the drama that's surrounding Ole Miss, it would behoove them to win with style points here, to really put up a massive number and kind of silence all the haters for everything that's going on with this program and the transition they're going to. The fact that you get Charlie Weiss Jr. back, their offensive coordinator, who Lane Kiffin is allowing to go work with Ole Miss and call the plays here and call the offense, I think adds to, you know, some synergy here with Golding obviously taking over as the head coach from being the DC. So I don't have any concerns about Ole Miss here. I think they put up a massive number.
Two games in 90 seconds. Miami with a big number on it, minus three. Check that. Texas A&M minus three against Miami.
I wish this game was at night because then I'd be more inclined to back the home field here in Kyle Field and Texas A&M. This is a stay away from me. This is one that I'm going to watch and enjoy. I do think that both defenses can come up with huge stops. I lean towards the under.
And the Friday night tilt rematch again, Alabama and Oklahoma. Alabama got picked three times, gave up a pick six, doubled in yardage, though. Who wins this one?
Yeah, everyone talks about how Alabama dominated that first game but still lost. But what I want to talk about is, when was the last time Alabama looked good?
Yeah,
it's been well over a month. They got outgained by South Carolina, could have lost that game. They didn't look sharp against LSU, scoring just two touchdowns. They got outgained and outplayed by Auburn. They got dominated in the SEC championship game by Georgia. I'm sorry. Like, the fact that this team's in the college football playoff is an absolute joke. They're going to lose this game. Oklahoma's defense is the best defense in the country next to Ohio State. This line does not make any sense for Alabama being a favorite on the road here. I understand they were a touchdown favorite when the game was in Tuscaloosa, and yeah, they dominated them. But look at what's happened over the last couple of weeks. Alabama hasn't looked good, and John Mateer is healthier now with this time off. I think Oklahoma wins at home.
Scott, 15 seconds. Tell people what's going on this weekend on VSiN.
Yeah, we got the Saturday night show, Cashing Out, which I'll preview all the NFL Sunday games. Then I'll be on Live Bet Sunday. We'll preview Sunday Night Football, take you through the live betting of the afternoon slate there.